Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Sirius Bulsara, Head of Data Services at the Children's Society.
So my first question actually is about data. So I think a lot of people don't realize this, but is data a creative kind of art form?
That's an interesting question. It can be. I think it can be creative, but there are rules that that you have to apply that I think would stop people thinking of it as creative. There's certainly how you manage data and how you make sure it's properly formatted is quite, you know, you need to be careful and strict about that. But how you then use it to create reports or to create insight is certainly a creative process, I think.
Interesting. And do you encourage your team to kind of be creative in that sense? Is it important to build an environment for the data team that allows them to be creative?
Yes, I definitely think so. I'm creative in its widest sense, and we often come across everyday problems or issues with data that we have to solve usually quite quickly. And so people thinking slightly more creatively or thinking outside the box is definitely useful for that. My team produces outputs and data selections for various communications that the organization carries out. And so we're given a brief from the project manager, and we have to supply that brief to their specification, but we also have to advise the project manager on what we think would be the best way of achieving their goals. And so I think having the space to be creative in that is definitely useful. I do sort of encourage the team to do that and come up with different ways of achieving the same goals.
It's interesting. And how do you kind of go about that, I suppose, from a practical sense and kind of building that sort of environment for them to be allowed to do it? Is there kind of practical things that you can do in the office space? You know, we talked about briefly about, you know, working from home, like what kind of things have you found that typically can help?
There are practical steps you can take. I'm making sure people have access to particular tools and software is important. We try and in my team we have people do have access to different tools that they can use for getting data out or getting data in, and that allows people to be a bit more creative and flexible rather than just having to stick to using one or two. So that's one practical step we take. But I think the other part is just encouraging them to think more creatively and question things, and we have, you know, in our sort of weekly meetings we encourage discussion about particular issues people are facing, and just getting them to share ideas and think more creatively, I think it's probably the best way of doing it.
Interesting. So from your kind of background and experiences, were you fortunate enough to be in, you know, an environment that, you know, you found really helpful, useful, and, you know, sharing, allowing you to be creative? What was the kind of background for you, or, you know, and what did you take from your experiences that now you kind of implement as a leader?
I think my background has always been in the charity sector, and some of the charities I've worked for have been quite small, and so you have to, in that sort of environment, the people who are managing you have rely on you to use your own initiative and use your own common sense and creativity to get the work done. And I think the charity sector is quite good at encouraging people to do that. It's possibly not as rigid as possibly some other sectors are, not that I know very much, having not worked in them very much. So I've always been able to work on problems myself and have, you know, guidance, obviously, but, you know, people expect me to, you know, go off and solve something or get some work done in the best way that I see fit. So I suppose it's come down to that issue of micromanaging. I think that's certainly in the organisations I've worked for, there's been less of that, and people have, because they're so small, people have sort of let you get on with the work with some guidance. And I've tried to, as I've sort of gone up the management scale, try to encourage people to do that themselves and not micromanage them, and give them that sort of, give them a safety net, but also leave them to use their professionalism and skills to solve problems themselves.
So, you know, with that whole kind of, you know, micromanagement thing, it all kind of builds into a kind of pretty modern problem, I'd say. Well, I suppose relatively speaking, but retention, you know, and obviously for you, you've always been kind of compelled to stay in the same sector because of, you know, the way it's been allowed to make you work. You know, how important is that now from a recruitment perspective and, from a retention perspective?
Yes, definitely. We were in the job I'm working at the moment. There has been the team I'm in. There's historically been quite a high turnover of staff, and that's obviously problematic for the organisation because new staff have to come in and be trained up and then sort of work out what the work is and, you know, get up to speed. So we've and very fortunately, the organisation I'm in is got some very good family-friendly policies and flexible working policies built in. So you have those available to staff. And what we've done recently is there's been a push to encourage people to get to know what those policies are. And we've had there's one of them, for example, is a compressed working hours policy. So people do 35 hours in a week. The traditional method is to do that over 5 days, but we can allow people to do that over 4 days. So they do 4 longer days, and then they basically have a day off a week where they're not working. And my team have embraced this quite well. So I think I'm the only member of my team that isn't on compressed hours at the moment, just because of my long commute that I have. But that being able to offer that to staff and, you know, manage it properly so that work's still covered. So we have people taking their day off spread out over the week rather than everyone off on a particular day. But that is a good, useful tool for retention, because if people can feel like they're happy in their job and they're able to balance that with their home life. And many of the people in my team, a few people in my team have got children, for example. So if they're able to see that, yeah, this is a great place to work because I can really get a good work-life balance, and I think that does aid retention. And obviously that's very good for the organisation if there are staff that know the work well and know the data that we work with well, and that keeps that continuity going.
Well, as you say, with charity, I'm assuming it's probably quite easy to be motivated by the outcomes. But, you know, needless to say, even with that in mind, you still have to feel as though, you know, the work that you're doing, you know, is in some way impacting, you know, the outcomes. And there's kind of a consciousness that you have to remind yourself and your team about, so they kind of understand that, you know, not just kind of getting lost in, you know, some kind of day-to-day tasks.
Yeah, and that's very true. And a lot of the people, because I've obviously interviewed quite a lot of people in various roles, and, you know, people do say that they're working in this sector because they feel like they want to make a difference, or they want to, or there's particular causes that they feel passionate about. So the organisation I work in at the moment is very good at trying to keep staff informed of all the different projects and work that they're doing through things like workshop sessions and presentations and weekly emails. So it is very important that people can see the benefit of their work and what it's doing, because it's quite easy to get lost as a small cog in a large organisation. But the one I work with at the moment certainly is working very hard to keep staff informed of the impact of their work.
So I do want to talk obviously a little bit about kind of data and the technology. You know, obviously I'm by no means an expert at this, so bear with me for the layman questions. Get ready for them. But how is it, I suppose, to start off with, you know, how much better, if better is the right word, has technology allowed you to gather and present data in the time that you've been working with it?
It has moved on a lot, to say the least. And there's certainly a lot more tools out there to present data more visually to people, because I think there's previously it was very much, here's a spreadsheet, and you can make this look like a graph, and then you can give it to your colleagues and they'll be able to roughly see what's going on. But now there's that's moved on a lot. So there's tools now that people can use themselves. So I think Microsoft, although there are other suppliers out there, have got a tool where people can type in text what they want it to do. So show me all the people that donated last year. And they've just write that in text, and then it will go away in the back end and produce that for them. So that it's moving a lot more towards self-service reporting, so that people can actually sit down in front of it. They'll have all the data there in the background available to them. They'll have a tool in front of them they can just quickly and easily manipulate to produce the data they want in a consistent way. So rather than a techie team who's the only people that can produce these sort of reports, it's sort of moving slowly towards much more self-service functionality.
And what kind of benefits does that bring? I suppose besides the obvious, but efficiency, time, are these kind of the major things that you know you're able to kind of save from this kind of self-reporting technology?
I think it brings people a lot closer to the data they're working with. So you have a fundraiser in a large organisation might not be as close to the data as the data team, but now they can see that themselves. They can go in and work out questions they want to ask themselves and ask the tools to produce that for them. And because that becomes easier, then they can ask more complex questions and really get a lot of insight into the data they're working with. So I think it brings them a lot closer to it, and it builds their confidence as well, I think. If it's just something that some other people do that they sort of rely on but aren't too sure about, then confidence isn't as good as if they're actually looking at it themselves on a regular basis and asking questions and figuring it out themselves.
Yeah, interesting. It's almost kind of aside from that as well, I on the technical side and the outcomes. Have the outcomes really changed, and has the technology been a kind of a driving force in any way of changing some of the outcomes and some of the data that you're able to pull? I know that charity, healthcare in particular, are compelling areas to work in for data.
I think there's a lot more cleverer things so you can do just in terms of producing a mailing, for example. So I used to be a fundraiser, and then I moved over into the data management side. But when I was a fundraiser, I was using a particular database, and you could get information out and do your selection, but it'd be quite fairly laborious if you wanted to do anything more creative or more complicated. And so that would tend to put you off. Whereas now there's tools that my team use that can do that a lot better. And so they're able to produce more complex selections, personalize it a lot more, which is obviously a very big issue for any company in terms of contacting their supporters or their customers. you can really drill down into the data and personalize the communication a lot more, so it looks starts to look like you're having a one-to-one relationship with your supporter or customer. So I think the tools have definitely allowed that to happen a lot more, and I think that'll only increase, and especially if you look towards all the more online functionality that we have. So the emails, you can really base it on activity that someone's done almost not quite up to the minute, but almost, you know, they did something yesterday, you can include that in your email to them the next day. So I think that, yeah, it's allowing my team and others to really move that forward.
When it comes to some of the outcomes that you're working toward and the projects that you kind of set forth on, how much, as we were talking about earlier with the creative side of things, is your team allowed to kind of dictate, and how much of the kind of desired outcomes that you're trying to find from the data, you know, comes from, you know, other parts or, you know, the hierarchy or et cetera?
I think it's a collaborative process. So I think, again, the charity sector is quite good at this, about valuing each. So if you have a team that's working on a particular project, you value each member of the team's contribution. The sort of senior management will give the overall direction, but you are sort of left to trying to figure it out yourself and trying to work out the best way of achieving the goals of a particular project or particular communication.
And what kind of projects do you particularly like to get stuck into? What's your kind of favourite stuff to work on?
That's a good question. I used to be a lot more hands-on than I am now, because I'm sort of managing a large team that do a lot of the hands-on work. I suppose I always like it when there's a new data source coming in that we need to find the best way of processing and find the best way of presenting that into the database system. So we use various different import tools that we can use to do that. I still find that quite satisfying when, you know, you're just given some raw data and you've sort of made it work into the database so it can then be used by teams. I suppose doing the team I'm in at the moment doesn't do the data analysis side as much, but we have colleagues in another team that do that. But it's always good seeing how data analysis can solve particular issues or look at how it can influence decision making. I've always found that very motivating.
And you know, now as you mentioned, you're going over into the management side, and a lot of your responsibilities aren't quite as hands on. Have you found, you know, a lot of satisfaction from the management side, or, you know, as much so as you did when you were kind of more hands-on on the tools?
Yes, and it is different. This role particularly has moved in that direction. So, whereas before I was like the technical expert and knew how to do all the different database functions as better than anyone else in the particular department or team. Now I've got people in my team who are much better at using particular tools than I am. And that's been a different way of thinking about it. But I've also, so I'm now sort of get motivated by encouraging them to use those skills and develop them and, you know, move them on. So we have one person in my team who's just recently left, but has moved on to an analysis role because we were able to encourage them to go in that direction. That was something they wanted to do, but the analysis role is within the same organization, so that's a definite plus point. So there's things like that when you're helping staff move on, but also encouraging them to use their skills within the organization. It's those sort of things. Plus I did I restructured the team a little while ago to provide a better service to our stakeholders, so projects like that, you know, sort of more strategic and more senior, are definitely it's really good to get my teeth into those.
You know, the transition or period, how do you remember that from the point where you were kind of becoming more of a manager? You know, what was that experience like?
It kind of crept up on me to a certain extent, because I sort of started the role in a lower level as a manager, and then now sort of a head of level, so I manage managers. So when I started, I was hoping to get obviously increase your skills. Whenever you move to a different post, you're looking to increase your skill set. But then very quickly, I was sort of shunted upwards a little bit to manage the team more and manage particular projects. So it was definitely something that needed getting used to, knowing that that you were not going to be, you could make decisions, but you were not going to be the sort of the technical expert. That's definitely something that took a while to get used to. But it's been good overall.
Do you think that you were kind of built up quite quickly, but do you think that it was quite a natural process for you to kind of step into that kind of type of work?
I was certainly, I think it was in the end a fairly natural progression. I also managed my previous role, and there was lots of, it was in a higher education organisation, and there was lots of opportunities for training there and becoming a, increasing your leadership skills and management skills. So I took those opportunities to sort of build up my skill set in that area. Because as you say, it's still a skill set that you need to learn about. You can, I think there are some people who are naturally good leaders and managers, but at the same time, there is skills you can learn in order to become that. And when I started the current charity, my line manager actually left only a few months after, was actually resigned just before I started, and then worked out their notice period while I was there. So then I had to step up into their role. So that was quite a quick transition. But I sort of took it on, and you know, that was one of the things I wanted to move to the size of organisation that I did, in order to have those challenges and see if I could meet them successfully, which you may have to talk to other people, but it seems to be all right so far. So I think initially there was a bit of a jump, but I think gradually that settled down, and as you say, it became a bit more of a progression. I think the skill sets you're probably talking about are things like listening skills and tailoring your management to individuals. You can't really manage individual staff all in the same way. You have to see what strengths people have and tailor your management to those and see what sort of person they are. What motivates them is a very big issue, and try and use that to develop them as a team member. I think you need to be able to be brave in certain situations and make decisions and be able to back those up with knowledge and information. But I think you certainly need to be not afraid of making decisions and backing those up. I think those main ones, I think.
You know, we're kind of ashamed of any failures, but it's actually, as a manager, it's such an endearing quality to be able to kind of put your hands up and just say, I was wrong. And your team, I think, feed from that, and in turn, you know, will also feel confident in kind of, you know, being truthful and owning up to things. And I think in what that kind of does is reduces that period of doing things incorrectly. You know, I think if we can just admit to our failures straight away, you can adjust and fix them. But you know, a lot of people are scared of taking ownership, and I think all that does is kind of prolong issues. Certainly that's what I've seen from a personal perspective.
I think that's exactly right. And when you're managing a team, you not only do you have to bear responsibility for the mistakes you make personally, but also mistakes in your team, and you have to, you know, find that out and address them. But you have to then, you know, go and talk to your line manager or senior management, explain what happened, and you know, you have to own up to your, you know, your team making mistakes as well. So that's the added burden of management, I suppose.
It is indeed. And you know, I'm conscious of time as well. I don't want to keep you for too long. I know you've got places to go, people to see. But you know, finally, what is exciting you, I suppose, at the moment? What's compelling you in the, you know, kind of the space that you occupy, you know, industry, technology wise, you know, what things you're working towards? You know, what kind of trends are out there? What are you, you know, particularly motivated by and excited about at the moment?
I think that in my area and in the so on data management and in the charities sector, there's been traditionally been a few tools that people use to manage their data. There's been particular market leaders in CRMs or in data management, and those traditional tools are starting to fall away a little bit and being replaced by new ones, which offer, you know, potentially great leaps in functionality. So as I said earlier, a lot more opportunities to do personalization and really use the data that you gathered legally. So there's tools that I think people from other sectors have been using for a while, but they're sort of trying to be adapted to the charity sector now. So there's things like Microsoft Dynamics and Salesforce. They're sort of really trying to work with charities a lot more and see what people can do with those particular tools. So that's the sort of big thing on the horizon that's motivating, exciting for me at the moment, is trying to leverage those really interesting new high functional tools to support the charity's aims.
Interesting. It's great stuff, mate. Well, Cyrus, thank you so much for taking the time. I enjoyed the chat. Hope it was okay.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.